Adrian Broner, the problem, one of the best nicknames in sports right now, but at the moment is just a big-talking, fast southpaw prospect. And tonight we find out if maybe he's something more than just that.
In fact, when we asked about being on this big stage in this co-feature on Boxing After Dark and how he sort of is going to temper his emotions, he said, well, same way that you guys need to temper your emotions in meeting me.
Welcome back to the Sunday Puncher podcast. I'm here with me, and I promise you he's going to talk a little more than last time he was here. Jason's back. Jason, we had some feedback. I guess some people were a little disappointed the last time you were on that you didn't really talk too much.
Good, fuck them.
That's good. That's good. They were upset that you didn't talk. They wanted to hear you. I guess they think you have good points of view. Like, you actually do research and prepare for this.
I don't have much to say about. I just didn't have much to say about that topic. And, there, and honestly, MMA doesn't interest me at all.
Did you learn anything though? Did you think it was interesting?
I learned a ton, but it didn't like spark like some interest in MMA within me though.
No, it wasn't supposed to. But at least did you like? Was it interesting for you to learn the business aspect of how it works over there and how deluded their fans are and, you know, supporting basically all the bosses who make all the money and not the guys who put their necks on the line?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, yeah, my biggest takeaway was basically, you know, the differences in the payment structures and how heavily controlled and regulated MMA is from that standpoint versus, you know, our Wild West of boxing.
Yeah, I mean, MMA works the way you do it. It does at your company where, you know, you make a ton of money and all the people who actually do the work get nothing.
Right. Most companies. Yeah, exactly. Boxing is really not much of an exception, but there is. But it's so weird. That's the other thing. There's so many boxers who, like, don't get paid a lot. Like, if you look at everybody who boxes, right, not just, you know, the top of the sport, there are so many people who do not get paid well and still put their life, their, you know, their health on the line. But at the same time, there is a chance to be compensated insanely in boxing, right, where just that net is not as wide in MMA, it seems. And in boxing, you get to choose who you fight. And that's part of what makes boxing so endearable, is that, like, the two best fighters may not fight each other for 4 years. And it,
seven.
You know, it just makes it – Canelo was only 16 back then. No. GGG was in Europe. In Germany. No, but it just it
who
makes
he does not deserve to have his name even brought up with Canelo.
All right, what are we moving on to? I'm not talking about this anymore.
Garcia Broner, why don't you lead it off?
Okay, I'll be like Mikey and lead the entire night.
Wow, Mr. Pauly here.
Here's my thing. I didn't really look at your scorecard. I
wasn't scoring.
Comfortably, you weren't? Okay. I comfortably gave Broner 1 to 2 rounds. So it was just really like a complete and utter shutout. And even the rounds where Broner did win, they were close rounds nonetheless. So the thing that makes me so frustrated though, right, is
you're
when
Broner
fan. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. When Broner has his like quick flashes of brilliance, he's so freaking good looking. Like, he's just so quick and sharp and precise and accurate. Like, he is that like whole package, that athleticism that just like people die for. He has it, and he doesn't always show it though. But when he does, and in this fight, it was very few and far between. In his typical fights, he definitely shows that a lot more. So if you haven't seen a lot of him and this is kind of what you're judging off of, you're going to think I'm crazy because he really didn't show it that much. But when he does have that, it's like, damn, like this kid is so, so good. Like if he could just like capture that and at least fight half of each round that way, but he just couldn't. Mikey took everything away from him. Mikey made him gun shy, and he already has a low punch output. You know, Mikey was able to back him up. Mikey was able to get off first and just make him hesitant. Like, Mikey just fought like this insanely technical, just like perfect, like robot boxer Mikey type performance.
So there's a style that we've talked about on the podcast many times before, and it's one I'm big on. And there's only a few boxers who actually have this style, and that's the neutralizer. And you don't get it just for boxing, you know, or being a counterpuncher. You do not get it just, you
right,
know,
the pure boxer or just the counterpuncher. They don't have that style.
This is when you
different.
Graduate into.
Right.
And it's when you enter another level. So Floyd Mayweather's a neutralizer. Andre Ward, neutralizer. And Terrence Crawford is that way now, too. And I think it's safe to say that Mikey's graduated into that, where he just shuts you down. And yep. he's going to take away everything that you want to do and leave you fighting the fight he wants you to fight. And
yeah, he makes it impossible for you to succeed. Like, it's so difficult but simple, right? It difficult to execute but simple in concept, as in, like you said, he just shuts you down. Like, that's it.
And when he does that, you know, it's impossible for him to lose. You cannot beat him if you're fighting the way he wants you to fight. And so this a lot of people, which is, you know, like a straw man argument, I think. But I think there was a loud contingency of fans who were saying that Mikey's success in the fight was partly due to Broner's lack of success. For, I don't know, have a better way to say it. But basically that Broner was the one who had Mikey be so successful. And that is just not the case at all.
No.
Because I thought Broner looked pretty good. I thought
exactly
the Broner that showed up would have probably beaten a lot of guys.
He would have whooped up on most 140 pounders. He really would have. He was good. He was in shape. He didn't look weight drained. He didn't look fatigued.
He was sharp with his counters when he landed them. But
exactly, like, that's what I was saying. Like, he has these flashes, man, where he just looks so damn good, but he just couldn't hold it together. And if you think that's some fault of Broner's, you're nuts, because he's done it in other fights. Like, this was Mikey shutting him down.
And that begs the question now of, so I think there's, you know, a few fighters currently active that are pretty unbeatable. At least it's going to take, like, you know, remember, we had this conversation a long time ago where basically certain fighters are so good and they reach a level where the only way you can conceivably come up with a way that they would lose is to find opponents that are in other weight classes. That's how you know you're one of the best fighters in the sport.
Is to put him against Andre Ward, right?
Right, or Andre Ward has to fight Deontay Wilder or something.
Right.
Is Mikey there?
So that is a really good question. I think, I think he's damn close. I think the tough part is you look at Broner's career and you know a little bit about his background and his history. And you say he lost all of his biggest fights, right? So it's true. It's tough to say that, you know, are we going to say Mikey is like this unbeatable machine that has to be, you know what I mean, that can't be stopped by anybody in his weight class? I don't know, because Crawford beats that boy. That's it.
Yeah, and I was waiting for you to go there. I think the one thing, and I think if we take
if Crawford wasn't
out of
the
equation, yeah.
Yeah, you want to take my man Bud out? All right. Now we can have this conversation. But Crawford, there's no getting past him, I don't think. I think it would be a brilliant fight. Like, that's a fight. You're crazy if you don't want that fight. Like, you got to drool over that fight. It'd be amazing. Who knows how that fight plays out. Like, there's so many different kind of roads it could go down because of the two, their fighting style. So, I got Crawford all day.
At this point, I think Crawford's been there longer than Mikey, and therefore Crawford, I don't think, loses to Mikey. I just think Crawford has something in him that's
fight.
Different. Absolutely. It's the best fight you can make in boxing, I think.
Yeah.
Max Kellerman would argue that it's Crawford versus Spence, but it's Crawford versus Mikey.
No, it's Crawford versus Mikey because of the weights. You know, like Crawford and Mikey are, you know, more comparable in weight than Crawford and Spence. Spence is a monster, dude.
Yeah,
Spence is huge.
I think that Crawford's a bit bigger than Mikey too, but we haven't seen Crawford fight at 147. We've seen Mikey fight at 140 pretty effectively. And we know that Mikey looks, you know, he looks a lot different at 140 than he does at 135. That's for sure.
He got that little pudge going.
Or maybe he just didn't even take Broner that serious. That would be scary if he was like, I know what to do. I just have to do regular boxing stuff. You know, I think we got to move off this topic because there's like a ton of other things to talk about. But Regis Prograis is a name that we both know. And if you've heard his name before, you know that he's one of the top prospects on the sport right now. And has looked very good. He just fought another, I don't want to say top prospect because he wasn't, but, you know, a prospect who was undefeated at the time and everything, and Prograis just destroyed him. How do you feel about Prograis versus either Mikey or Broner?
I would obviously say Broner would be the better next step for him from a career development standpoint.
Do you think he beats him?
I don't know that he beats him, but I think it's a great... I think it's a great fight, and I think it could easily be one of these fights where, you know, the boxing populace gets behind it and says he's too early. He might be too early, right? And that would just make it all the more, you know, exciting. And obviously, Broner would have a lot to prove coming off of this loss. So it would really be a great, you know, matchup for both of them at this point. What do you think?
I think it's a great fight. I think if I'm Prograis, I'm trying to position myself for that fight. I mean... And if
you're not going after Mikey though. I mean that's too much to chew off.
I think if you're a promoter as well, this is the perfect time to get him that fight because you know Prograis could lose that fight. I don't know, maybe he's not that great. But if he is, he beats him, it's like you get all the credit of beating a Broner and the name that comes with it without having to get too much criticism if he were to do it, say, 2 years from now. So I think it's the perfect time. Let's move on to Jermall Charlo in what was a very strange fight. So Jorge Heilin comes in with his knee wrapped, doesn't ask for them for permission to have his knee wrapped. So they tell him, take it off. And what proceeds to happen is that his knee is completely messed up. Dude is walking around the ring like there's an earthquake going on.
Dude did his best Sergio Martinez impression.
I mean, Jesus, Sergio looks smoother in the ring than this guy. This guy looked like he was fighting on lava. He kept jumping up.
I told my wife, I was telling her, she was in the other room when I was watching the fight. And I was like, this guy is walking like he's on stilts right now. Like he's fighting without bending his knees. It was the most insane. It was just so insane. And I get it. These guys are hungry for a paycheck. Like, his knee was obviously busted bad before this fight, before he even stepped in the ring. And it only took a couple punches to really make it horrible. But that's one of those times where you just got to ask yourself, like, did you make the right decision not calling the fight off? Like, who knows when that injury occurred? I don't know. But right. It did not happen in the ring that night. It only got worse that night.
It's not like he was fighting. Yeah, obviously the injury was already there when they tried to come in with it wrapped, and apparently he could barely walk through the ring ropes. But I mean, the thing is, I understand if you're messed up and everything, but like this is the wrong opponent to try to come in injured. Like, okay, so who are the five most dangerous fighters in the sport right now? It's like Golovkin, AJ, Spence, and Charlo. Crawford, yeah. Probably. I mean, right, like, the Crawford. Big punchers. And it's Charlo's in that conversation because, one, the dude has probably the best jab in boxing, and two, he's got power in both hands. And you're going to come in with no knees and try to fight him?
Not even one bad knee. Two bad knees.
I mean, dude, it was horrible to watch. I mean, but that's what made it so funny is I could not believe my eyes what I was watching. I'm like, this is nuts. I cannot believe...
Yeah.
One, this guy's fighting, and two, that the referees looked at him and was like, oh, you're okay. The doctors, oh, you're all right.
The doctors are checking out his eyes. Like, the doctors are looking at his eyes.
Maybe he couldn't see the floor.
I'm like, I'm like, how about maybe, like, touch his knee? If you touched his knee, I bet he'd fall over in pain. Like, it was just such an odd thing when they kept letting the fight go on when he was just so clearly injured, and the fact that his team didn't do anything to stop the fight. Like, listen, dude, you want a paycheck? You only need to make it one round. Like, you don't need to. You made it in the ring, man. You're getting paid. Like, because that's the only thing that I could think.
Yeah.
Is that he came for a paycheck at that point. He was so injured. So injured.
Yeah, and that's obviously what it was. They were going to get a paycheck. I mean, did they really think they could win? I don't know.
Exactly.
Like, if they really thought they could win that fight, he needs to fire his team. Because there's no way you're going to come in and win that fight. The plan should have been like, it should have been a Kell Brook plan. We're like, yeah, we know we're not winning, so we'll give a couple of good rounds, and then we'll just call it quits.
Don't worry, we'll get you out of there.
Yeah, well, you won't take much damage. We won't let him break your face.
His team left him hanging big time.
And now Hyland may never walk again. That's a joke, guys. That's a joke. All right, so Charlo Jacobs seems like the next logical step. And if you don't realize this, that's a brilliant step, because I'm very confident that's probably going to be a fight of the year candidate. But
yeah, Charlo Jacobs has like fireworks written all over it. I mean, come on, who do you pick in that fight? I would say Charlo. I would go with Charlo.
Charlo has the unknown component, because he's never been
exactly
beaten. He's never been beaten. But Jacobs, on the other hand, he's been written off before. People thought he'd get smoked in the Golovkin fight. I kept trying to tell everybody, no, Jacobs is a lot better than you're giving him credit for. He nearly beats Golovkin, takes Golovkin's punches, throws his own, and now people are thinking that Jacobs will get blown out by Charlo. It's the same thing over again. I don't think
he'll get blown out. I think it's a good. I think it's a great fight. But I think Charlo. I give Charlo the edge. I do.
I think it's a 50-50
fight.
You don't know.
Yeah.
If Charlo wins, it'll be off of the jab. That'll be the thing that separates them, because I think they're very similar in a lot of other ways. But Charlo's jab is next level. He'll out-jab Golovkin. Probably drop him from a jab after Canelo's done with him.
All right,
I'm kidding.
Did you catch Billy Dib?
Are you kidding me? I was live at the Billy Dib fight. No.
How'd my man do?
Billy Dib has not been on my radar since like 2012, back when he was in Fight Night Round 3.
I saw him fight in Connecticut once.
I mean, the truth
outside,
is...
Outside of a bar.
Oh, I mean, if you do want to know how the fight went, it went three rounds and it ended in a no contest.
Oh, okay.
So that could have been anything.
Seems par, yeah. He's had a couple odd losses, or, you know, odd fights there.
It's not an odd loss if you're not good.
Oh,
those are well deserved.
Damn.
What'd you think of Big Baby?
I didn't watch Big Baby.
Oh,
what happened?
God. Well, he was massive for one. we'll start there. He was massive. Two, he does not move like a guy who's nearing 300 pounds.
You mean he was massive? When you say he was massive, you mean he was cut?
Cut or cooked?
Yeah.
He ate a lot of cooked food, that's for sure. No, the dude is massive, but he looks like the kind of guy that's like, what are you going to do? He can't help it. He's like, no. that's just him.
He's massive, but he's going to move like Andy Ruiz. He got a little bit of quickness.
Hey, he's quicker than Andy Ruiz, I'll give him that. And he's probably heavier.
I heard Gerald Washington couldn't stand up to that storm, huh?
Washington looked like Washington wasn't bad. No, I'll take that back. He was pretty bad.
There you go.
He was. It just looked like Washington thinks that he's the most elusive fighter on the planet. So he fights like it, but it's like, dude, you're getting hit, and his chin, like, you know, Wilder knocked him out. But
yeah,
Washington has a really good chin.
Yeah, Wilder hits pretty damn hard too.
And he only, like, it took him a while to get him down. Washington got stopped, but it looked like it was only a stoppage because he got hit so much, not because
he didn't go down.
Yeah, Big Baby wasn't like this murderous puncher, and that's a problem for him. I don't know what he's got a lot of stoppages for sure, but he does need to develop like a power shot or something to shorten fights, because he did look like he was losing some steam as it was going on, naturally for a 300 pounder.
I mean, come on, man. He's not going to be hanging around the top scene of the heavyweights.
I think he's really solid. Like, he does a lot of really nice things. Like, his head movement is really good.
Just say it. You think he beats AJ? Just say it.
I don't think he beats AJ, but I know he beats Dillian White, who the British people, and you're going to hate this.
God.
The British people, the British fans were saying that Dillian White beats him, that he's like not even better than Derek Chisora.
Oh, give me a break. Dude, they have such a skewed vision of what, you know, their talent is. Because here's where really the problem is. When you are constantly watching, you know, low-level people fight in competitive fights, it makes you think that, oh, they're good. Like, look at all the problems they're giving each other, right?
Yeah.
But no, they're just not good.
And
they're
then you
both
see
not
Luke,
good.
Then you see Luke Campbell against a domestic French fighter, and it's like, oh, Luke Campbell's not good. Whoops.
That sucked. That was one of the more painful ones.
Because you saw Luke Campbell's calendar pictures
spread
that
in
he did?
GQ magazine.
Yeah. It wasn't GQ.
It was...
Oh, no.
I
tried. Don't do it. So, Zhu Xueming lost his title this week.
That could have been a good one, man.
Could have been a good one? What?
Yeah, it could have been a good joke had I gotten it, had I hit it.
Yeah, you didn't hit it.
Nope.
Just like the way Xueming didn't hit anything in this fight, because he got stopped. Losing his WBO flyweight title, and now the flyweight division has lost a cash cow, has lost most of the interest that the world had been paying it. We might get some more interest in the division if Kazuto Ioka can, I don't know, unify a title or fight Donnie Nietes or something. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's life at flyweight. Let's move on, because I know you have nothing to say on that topic. I bet you could not, other than Ioka and Nietes, who I just mentioned, I bet you couldn't name another fighter in the top 10 at flyweight.
I'll be completely honest. I'd have a hard time repeating those two back to you now.
So that's a no. You cannot name a flyweight.
Takeshi's Castle?
No.
Real podcast listeners, the people who've been listening to this, the OGs will get that joke.
Okay. Let's move on to...
I don't even think you got it.
It's a TV show that you and Simon watched.
Yeah,
I don't think it's probably any
reference.
Good.
Yeah.
You guys are into, you know, stuff without much quality. Me, on the other hand, I only like pure quality. I don't waste my time with things like that. You know,
why he hangs around with me.
I don't hang around with you. You're always working and doing things like family stuff.
You know, my son said the other day, he's like, Dad, I'm going to be really upset if I don't meet Angelo this year. I'm just like, what? Like, all right. I'm like, buy his ass a plane ticket to get him out of here. What do you want me to tell you?
Did you tell him he needs to start seeing a therapist?
All right, go on.
Let's go.
We just got your hot take on Zhu Xueming. What's next?
the one take on Zhu Xueming this week. Let's see. You've thrown me off my thing now. This is great.
You're
podcast
going to Abel
listening
Sanchez.
Right now. Yeah, Abel Sanchez.
Abel Sanchez. Yeah.
I think it's time we stop putting a microphone in Abel Sanchez's face. He's gone delusional, and he's now basically. There's always a trainer who's gonna do stuff like this. You know, it was Freddie Roach for a while, Robert Garcia. And now it's Abel Sanchez, who, and I'm just gonna basically paraphrase here, but he said after the Charlo Hyland fight, after he ran it for what felt like 30 minutes, but it was probably an hour or something, who is Charlo? Charlo's nobody. He hasn't earned the right to be mentioned with Golovkin's name. I think when Golovkin struggled with Danny Jacobs, that's called, yeah, you deserve to be mentioned with the top middleweight names. So let's start there. Okay. Since when is Golovkin like a name? He ain't that big of a name.
That's the thing. I mean, it would be one thing if he was like the next like Oscar De La Hoya or Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather, like some household name, right? But we could all be honest with each other.
He's 35.
Not. He's hardly known in boxing circles. He can't sell a pay-per-view to save his life. Oh, Tom Lawfer from K2, thank you for doing the AMA.
I know. Watch what you say. Watch what you say.
No, but let's be real. He when I say he can't sell a pay-per-view to save his life, when you and I both know that he actually has, you know, a respectable pay-per-view number when you put it into the perspective of
when you compare it to Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev, but who's splitting hairs?
No, let's be real. Let's be real. That pay-per-view made everybody money.
Right.
Nobody went bankrupt on it. You know what I mean? Which in the boxing promoting business, that's what people care about.
And it did 100,000 more buys than Crawford Postal.
So, boy, no, I'm not going to say that. So, anyways,
I threw him off. Sanchez,
yeah, you did.
Jake's got all these inappropriate jokes now forming in his head we started off the podcast on the wrong foot.
We really did.
The tone was not set. This is where Simon comes in handy.
Yes. So here's the thing, though. I do agree with you. But I kind of disagree with you because you have a fighter like Golovkin who's known for his little quips in the ring afterwards, this broken English, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is Golovkin cannot, you know, appropriately like advocate for himself as a fighter in English. He just can't. He does some great stuff that made him super popular, but beyond that, he can't. So that's where your promoter or your trainer like step in and do this. So do I think it's like a ridiculous statement? Yes. Do I understand why he's saying it? Absolutely. So
that I think you're right. I want to disagree, but I think you're right because what sells fights is the fire.
Is conflict. Right.
Conflict. Yeah, exactly. I mean, conflict sells everything. I mean, you look at everything from a boxing match to freaking Better Call Saul, who will not win an Emmy.
I mean, look at Luke Campbell. What did he have to do to try to sell fights? Ooh. Sex and conflict sell.
Jesus Christ. I'm not editing that out, just so you know.
That's fine.
I have enough to edit already. But I mean,
conflict sells fights. If he gets Golovkin's name out there, we're talking about it on the podcast. Like, you know what I mean? He made his point and it's working.
I just think that at some point it's going to start backfiring. We've already seen the Golovkin backlash already start, and it's not like the Kovalev backlash at this point, but he's seen some backlash. Some of his original fans are starting to turn on him, either from annoyance of the fans that he's developed and picked up along the way, or because of stuff like this that Abel Sanchez is saying. So I think with Golovkin, it's a special entity where he had this like really unique thing where almost the entire, like really when Golovkin, his first four or five fights on HBO, everyone was unified.
Oh my God, he was universally loved throughout, you know, the boxing landscape, which never happened. I mean, he didn't start really taking on detractors till he became a little bit, you know, more popular. But man, after he demolished Proska on HBO, like, come on, who wasn't in love with him at that point? All 30,000 of us.
Yeah, exactly. no, it's a little more. You're thinking of Crawford. Crawford's pay-per-view numbers. Let's move on. So we had a lot of retirements this week.
A lot of people, they dropping like flies out there.
So interesting point that I did want to point out is that we had two pairs of opponents retire, and then we had Tim Bradley. Who do you want to talk about first?
That bad boy, Timmy B.
Okay, what can we say about Tim Bradley? He got three Pacquiao paydays, one Marquez payday, made one of the most dramatic shifts in public opinion that I've probably ever seen in boxing history.
Ever. Yeah.
And now he retires.
I mean, it is so, in my opinion, it is so sad to see him go. But at
dude,
the
he
same
retired,
time,
not died.
you don't know. The podcast hasn't been released yet. It could still happen.
Jesus Christ.
The hit could still go through. No, but I'm dead serious. He was one of my favorite fighters. I happened to started watching him very, you know, right as I was really getting into boxing a lot. I watched the first Pacquiao fight live, and maybe
you
it was
cried.
A little bit after, actually. But Pacquiao and Mayweather and help brought me into the sport, like a lot of people, right? Very similar. And I didn't like watch the sport growing up. I got brought into it, you know, in adulthood, and it took, you know, the popular fighters to bring me in. And then, you know, he had beat, you know, Manny Pacquiao, and I, you know, didn't like it, and I was pissed off, and, you know, all that typical, like, fan kind of stuff. And then he went and fought Pervodnikov on Boxing After Dark in front of 150 people in the StubHub Center, right?
It was a little, like, more than that, but yeah, sure.
Maybe. You know, it was a small attendance. And it was, like, by the second round, any animosity you had towards this fighter for robbing your favorite fighter had melted away completely. Like, it was gone. And then you just, like, had to level set and be like, oh my God, what am I witnessing here? Like, he gave one of the most amazing performances in the sport of boxing. And I, you know, I have a personal connection to it because it did happen really early on when I became a fan. So it is still my absolute favorite fight because of everything that was happening surrounding it. You know, like you said, public perception transformation. He was getting death threats post Pacquiao won. Death
yep.
threats.
Yep.
Right? To becoming this beloved figure. And I can't remember the quote exactly, but somebody had summarized it really well, one of my friends. And he said, like, nothing removes animosity like getting punched in the face. Or, you know what I mean? Like, nothing will make you love a fighter more than when they get punched in the face. And, like, and that was it. It was so true. Like, you ended up loving Tim Bradley because he was getting punched in the face. Like, it really kind of distilled it down to this very, very simple, you know, concept, and it was very true. And
yeah.
That was John. He's an old amateur boxer and a writer. He's a very intelligent guy.
I remember we made the comparison between Bradley and Garcia when Garcia went through his fight. I can't remember which fight it was now.
Mikey or who?
Danny Garcia.
Danny Garcia. Yes. Yeah. We tried to with Matisse almost maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. But it didn't work out quite that well.
It didn't work out. No.
Because he won.
Because he won. Exactly.
Because he
won
outright.
Bradley won too. Bradley won too. But, you know, he
didn't almost deserve to get stopped. But that's a story or a conversation for a different day.
And there was a knockdown that got missed as well. So
yeah.
There were two different ways that he could have lost.
Yeah. And in fact, so Bradley should not have gotten that because I think he should have lost that fight. I love the fight too, but I think Bradley should have lost that fight.
He possibly should have lost it, but it's irrelevant now, and that doesn't matter.
No, it's not irrelevant. That derailed Ruslan Provodnikov's career.
Chris Algieri derailed Ruslan Provodnikov's career.
Let's move on.
And Mauricio Herrera derailed Ruslan Provodnikov's career.
Oh,
hold on. Every boxer he's ever faced derailed Ruslan Provodnikov's career.
I don't know about Mike Alvarado.
I said boxer, not...
Oh, God. You're making this very difficult to release.
No,
this
but
week.
Come on. You know, Alvarado was shot.
Dude, he's still fighting.
Oh, that I know. I saw something in a thread. I commented on it. It's just so sad.
All right. Well, we have a lot of retirements to go through, so let me just breeze through.
Anyway, I won't go as long on those. That was the one that I really wanted.
Yeah, because
to
you don't
about.
Know anything about Takashi Miura or Takashi Uchiyama.
Oh, I thought we're Tyson Fury.
We'll save that for last.
Okay.
Speaking of drugs. Miura.
It's all my fault.
Miura and Uchiyama were basically the premier Japanese 130-pounders of the past decade, really. And the thing is, they both had a terrific fight with each other. And I've mentioned this in the podcast before, and if you didn't listen to me last time, you need to go... If you think Bradley Provodnikov is an amazing fight, you need to go check out Miura versus Uchiyama. That's also just a terrific fight where you see the big name, the champion, have to go through hell in order to win. Damn, Uchiyama was a terror in his prime. I mean, he was just so good. The story back then was, could Mikey Garcia beat Uchiyama? Right. The best fight to make at that division was Mikey versus Uchiyama. And it never happened. And, you know, Uchiyama unfortunately had to basically go out against Jezreel Corrales, which I called. But anyway, Miura was the kind of guy who, and you saw this in the who did he just fight? Burchelt fight. Good power, all the determination in the world. And it was usually enough to cover up for his lack of skill because, you know, he's not the most skilled boxer. But both of these guys in the past year and a half lost the athletic edge that they used to have, and they could not readjust. I mean, we've seen some fighters able to readjust and then basically have a second career. You know, Hopkins, right. Eric Morales even. I think that's the second mention in this podcast. It's amazing.
Wow. And look, we made it back to Takeshi's castle.
So, Eric, no, I mean, like, of this episode, didn't we mention him earlier?
I don't know if it was before we were recording.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't even know how we came to it. But anyway, so yeah. they weren't able to do that. And you know what happens when you can't adjust? You basically get retired. So moving on to Tyson Fury, who had retired earlier. Now, Fury had issues in his personal life, issues with the British Commission. You know, he had his weight problems, which he's consistently ballooning up to above 300 pounds, as you do when you're 6'9". And then there's the failed drug tests. I mean, at this point, I'm sure with that Klitschko fight, he had earned enough money to basically make the decision to say, hey, I don't need to fight anymore. And, you know, just judging by the way Fury fought, he didn't fight like a guy who loved fighting. He fought like a guy that didn't like to get hit, that didn't really want, you know, there's some guys that are just like Mira, for example, loves fighting.
Right. That is not Tyson Fury.
And it's representative of the style he fought in, and that's not Fury at all. And so I'd love to have seen Fury versus Joshua, but I'm sure I think going forward with Fury's career, there'd be so many questions every single fight of like, well, is Fury taking this seriously? Is he in shape? Is he off the drugs? Is he like, you know, and it would taint every single win or loss.
It certainly could, because especially if they're losses, wins not so much, but losses, you never know if you got the same Fury that beat Klitschko. Do you know what I mean? Like you'd never really be able to tell.
And that's a robbery, really.
What'd you say?
That's a robbery. It robs the person who would possibly beat him and should get the credit for beating him of the full credit, I guess. You know, it's like Broner.
It's kind of like if a fighter were to go into the ring with two broken knees.
I thought that was a safe time to take a drink of coffee, but I guess not. And what could we say about Klitschko? I mean, dude had one of the most dominant runs in boxing history. I think everyone associates the decline of heavyweight boxing to him, which, you know, it's not the best sentiment, but the fact that it is a sentiment is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it made a real big impact.
I mean, the guy was so good, people stopped paying attention because he was too good. That's what it means. And I think that Joshua fight, like, it proved to him, you know what, you don't have that extra gear. In your prime, you probably would have smoked him, but or at least you would have finished him after you dropped him, but
right.
Not anymore.
And I think that fight was enough to prove to him, but I guess here's what I want to say. You know how sometimes fighters just want to get that last win before they go out?
Yeah.
I think that was a moral victory, that fight. Mm. Like, he gave us my favorite heavyweight fight in a very long time, for recent history, right?
Like, did you stop caressing your microphone?
Okay, sorry. You know, even though it was, you know, technically will always go down as a loss, that he could regard that fight as a moral victory. It was just an absolutely amazing fight, fan-pleasing, took on the biggest challenge at the end of his career, which is just nuts, like, never shied away from anything, you know, in today's, you know, landscape that's just so unheard of. So, you know, kudos for making the right decision.
Yeah, I think this was definitely the right decision. I agree with you on that. And
getting back in with Joshua, he wasn't going to win. I don't see him being able to pull out the victory. I just don't.
There was really no good route for him at this point. Like, if he didn't rematch Joshua, what does he do? Does he fight Wilder?
Big baby coming up.
Big baby. Does he fight Wilder, though? Like, that's a dangerous fight. And, you know, there's really something to fighters who want to go out on a win, right? But I think that is a flawed... it's a flawed approach, because if you win that fight, then you think you still have it.
Well, that's the thing. It's a vicious cycle. If you win, you think you could keep going. If you lose, you want to just get one last win. And then when you do get the win, even if you do lose the first time, you get the win the second time. Now you think you got it again. Like you said, it's a vicious, vicious cycle.
Yep. So, I mean, I know a lot of people, and even if you look at the thread, the Klitschko retiring announcement thread, you see people like, screw Vlad, in different words. He was boring and all that stuff. But there's something to say about the fact that this dude reigned the heavyweight division with an iron fist. I mean, no pun intended.
Love him or hate him, he changed the landscape of that division for a decade.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of Klitschko. I respected what he did, and I didn't find him as boring as some people did. I mean, the Fury fight was really tried my nerves, but otherwise...
There's a handful of fights out there that are pretty... The not Pulev, the Russian, help me out.
Povetkin?
The Povetkin fight was a freaking disaster.
Really? He dropped him like 8 times.
He didn't drop him. He like pushed him.
Well,
it was so bad.
No, that means that Povetkin's shin was really weak because he couldn't even stay up on a push.
Well, right, because he was being laid on top of.
Well, he should have stopped. He was bending at the waist the entire fight.
He was bending at the waist. I know. It was just, all I'm getting at is that it was an ugly fight to watch. Way uglier than the Fury fight.
Okay, does Klitschko get a pass for all of his boring fights because of the Joshua fight?
Yes.
I think that's the best thing to take away. I mean, the Pulev fight was really interesting, or really entertaining as well.
Yeah. I mean, he has had entertaining fights, but I think he kind of has a non-traditional fighting approach due to, you know, his physical attributes, right? So he utilizes them to the best of his ability. Maybe it's a little bit boring in some cases, but you know what? He gave it his all against
Joshua,
and
the biggest star in British
boxing.
So
fantastic. Yeah.
Well, all right, let's move on to the fight announcements. We have Anthony Joshua. He will fight Kubrat Pulev, two dudes who were just talking about.
Is Pulev still relevant?
That depends on how you want to frame the question. Like, is he still relevant as a world-level boxer in Bulgaria, I think, which is where he's from? Yeah, absolutely. He's number one.
Let's actually see. I'm going to check him out and see if he is actually number one in Bulgaria. Damn it.
Yes. Come on, dude.
You never know.
There's like two heavyweights in Bulgaria.
Milin Panov is right behind him with 1 point on BoxRec. To Pulev's 258 points.
Oh, he's 3-4. I fancy my chances against him.
I would.
His nickname is Power, too. Can you believe that? Like, you're so good that your nickname is literally Power.
And he has a negative record. I didn't know Pulev 5'9". Ripped off. I didn't know Pulev ripped off Frotch.
Oh, his nickname, the Cobra?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Frotch is going to come back after Joshua beats him and fight for the nickname.
There's only one Cobra in my heart, and he's got a beautiful fucking chin.
And nose now, too. One big thing that we have to note about Pulev is last opponents. Kevin Johnson has not landed a punch in a long time. On a fighter with
KJ.
Old
KJ.
Yeah. That's bars.
Bars, baby, bars.
Yeah, if you don't remember. And then he fought Sam Peter also. So, that says all you need to know.
Chisora.
Yeah, come on. We're talking about world-level fighters. He's beaten none since, like, ever.
Not for nothing. He got by Thompson in 13.
Tony Thompson in 2013. Yeah, you know what? I remember that fight. That was a very uncharacteristic fight of Tony Thompson. Tony Thompson got thoroughly outboxed.
Yeah, that's actually a skill. Like,
I literally deleted that from my memory though, because it was such a bad fight. I'm not even kidding. Wow. Like, I just had a flashback to that fight. Wow. Okay. Sergey Kovalev. And Joshua should knock him out pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
But Pulev's going to go down swinging. That's the one good thing about this fight. If you know, you don't really know too much about Pulev. Pulev's a dude who, I don't know what got into him, but he was a supreme boxer for a while. And then when he gets in the ring with Klitschko, he's just swinging for the fences. And I think we're going to see that guy come out again. Pulev was like a really good amateur, by the way, if you don't know his history or anything like that. Really good amateur. And he came up in Germany. So it's not like he's like a domestic Bulgarian fighter that you can just write off. You could write him off, but whatever.
You could definitely write him off, but he'll go down swinging.
Right. So let's see. Sergey Kovalev will be back on November 25th. Presumably this time he will get paid.
On HBO?
I don't know because I didn't read the article.
Okay.
I try not to read articles if the basically the news is in the headline, because especially from boxing scene, because if you ever notice boxing scene, it's basically two paragraphs of them summarizing and reiterating what a quote is. And the quote is usually like one sentence. Oh, and then they put the quote at the end, and it's like, you know, this isn't really journalism. Like, if you, like, there's a lot more that, if you, this is not what you see on ESPN.
I know. It's a very odd approach that happens to be working for them.
Hey, you know, I'm not saying that we should take credit away from them, because Boxing Scene is the best boxing website out there for all the news. They get the news, you know.
They get the news, they get it fast. You know what? And that's part of how they get it fast is, you know.
They put out pieces like that.
Right, exactly. Mm. So,
to each their own.
It would be interesting to see who he's fighting against and what.
Oh, it was a Dan Rayfield tweet.
Oh, is that what it is? All right.
Yeah, HBO card.
Okay.
Well, HBO HBO probably saw how Main Event's lowballed him, and they're like, hey, we could afford this.
He'll probably fight for 10 grand.
And the rumors
He'll
have
fight
been,
for a hot meal. Kovalev, you hungry, boy? Come here.
The rumor is that he's going to end up fighting Sullivan Barrera. It's a tough fight for Kovalev to face Barrera in your comeback fight after fighting Andre Ward and getting stopped.
Not for nothing, this has all the makings of an end of a career.
I agree with you.
It really does. It really does.
And publicly, you know, I always make it like I don't really care for Kovalev. I'm not a fan of his, like, and I don't like him. But, like, I also don't like hearing that. You know, I do have a ton of respect for Kovalev. I think he's a great fighter. I think he's underrated as much as crazy as that is that sounds. I think he's underrated in his skill. And,
well, he had some amazing performances. Right, like he just did. You can't take that away from him. And then getting whooped up on by Ward is, you know, who hasn't?
Right,
right. So,
this
could be the make or the break of it, dude. Though this could be it. Seriously,
I think you're right. But you know, not only that. Okay, the other thing is that I think what we learned from the Ward and the Hopkins fight was that all of Kovalev's success was. And, you know, those quick knockouts, beating up domestic fighters, blah, 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 who people thought weren't that good. The reality there was that wasn't just Kovalev's a big puncher. It's
no,
that
he's
Kovalev
a big puncher
is,
who knows how to set up his shots.
Yeah, like he's actually pretty brilliant.
Right. His footwork and his ability to trap people and move them backwards. I mean, top of the game. Like, top of the game.
Yeah, and I think Ward made that mistake with Kovalev in the first fight by thinking he just, like, there wasn't much skill there, and it was just, he was just a puncher. And you could fight you could fight punchers a particular way, and you could easily beat them. And we saw Mayweather make a career out of this.
Right.
But that wasn't, you couldn't do that with Kovalev. And it took Ward reaching deep into his well of greatness to actually beat him, because... And he barely nicked it in the first fight.
He barely got by the first fight, right?
So let's move on. Jorge Linares will fight Luke Campbell on HBO. Tell me how
really?
Excited you are for this fight. Yeah.
HBO, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting. So here's the thing. I've seen Linares fight a handful of times. I like him. He could be really good. And I think Luke Campbell is, you know, was good. He got his he had a loss there, but he's also shown to be, you know, to be well. I would think Linares has to be pretty heavily favored, but at the same time, Linares could be flawed as well. I don't know that Luke Campbell's going to be able to, like, exploit it, but this is one of those fights where you could probably get it pretty on a pretty good budget, and it'd be a decent fight, you know?
So this is an interesting take that you have. So you think that Linares is good, but not that great, and that possibly Luke Campbell could win this because he could catch Linares not being great.
I don't think he's going to be, I don't think he's going to be able to exploit any mistakes that Linares makes. I don't. I'm just saying that Linares isn't, you know, Crawford. You know what I mean? Like, he has his flaws.
Here's what I'm saying. If you're a British fan, you have to wait until the line moves on this one. Because right now, Linares is like a minus 350. The line's inevitably going to move. The British fighters are going to bet heavily on Campbell. And when the line gets close, you bet on Linares. And you make out like a bandit. Because that's just the way these things go. I think for sure...
you think for sure Linares wins.
Oh, God. Unless Campbell catches him, and I doubt he does, but... He has to catch
What
him.
Has Campbell done recently to manage getting on HBO? I feel like I missed something.
he's not.
It used to be like hard to get on HBO.
He's fighting for cheap. That's what it is.
He's fighting for cheap. Yeah.
Because Luke Campbell, he's gotten even getting this fight has been pretty weird. I think someone dropped and it made him the mandatory for the WBA title, which is bizarre. He beat Darlys Perez.
Oh boy!
Because Perez had an injured arm. I mean, Campbell's last let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 last 5 opponents. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Over under 20 losses combined.
Over.
Yeah, it's like 26 or 28. My little quick math. So.
Damn.
You know,
that's what I'm saying. Like, he hasn't really done much recently, so that I was kind of surprised to hear that he made it onto HBO. But I guess maybe the bar isn't as high as it used to be.
It's
to
not
get onto HBO.
It's not. They're looking for cheap fighters, and who do they work with now? Golden Boy and K2 and main events. That's it. This is a Golden Boy fighter. Campbell's got a little bit of a name. I think ratings wise, this will not do well. But hey. You know, they've had Linares on the channel before, and they gush over Campbell.
I've never seen Linares on Showtime a handful of times. He's been on HBO.
Yeah, when he fought DeMarco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was on back when, because he's been with Golden Boy for the entirety of most of his career, and when he fought on Showtime, it was back when HBO and Golden Boy had broken up for a while. So let's talk about Errol Spence versus Jeff Horn. Jeff Horn wants to fight Errol Spence. If I was Jeff Horn, and you were my friend, and you were going to sit me down, what would you tell me?
All right. Here's what I would say to you. I would say, listen, I know that you could beat Spence, but now's not the time. Remember, I'm your friend. I'd say now's not the time. What you should do is maybe try to get some low-hanging fruit in there, make a little bit more money out of your career, then go on and take on Spence. So that's what I would say if I was your friend.
See, this is why we're friends, because you are a good friend. Like, that would have never crossed my mind. I'd have been like, no, Jeff, listen. I'm your friend. I care for you, but I will never lie to you. You are not going to beat Errol Spence. He is going to destroy you.
Like, listen, I got you. I'm going to lie to you. You got this, but not right now.
Manny Pacquiao almost stopped you, okay? Think about that. Manny Pacquiao is like 56 years old. He's already been knocked out like 8 times.
His last stoppage was like 12 years ago.
So, you know, I think you should go the route of exactly the low-hanging fruit. But Errol Spence, come on now. They're talking about Spence beating up middleweights. You're Jeff Horn.
Let's be real. What do fighters do? It's the Mayweather effect.
They
just call out the biggest. No, they call out the biggest, baddest
name
in their division. Right? That's all he's doing. He never expects to get this fight. He'll never get this fight. And if he did, he'd be sorry that he did, because it would be a disaster.
You don't think they're talking to Horn's people and say, oh, you would like to fight, wouldn't you? You know that Spence's people are like, oh, for sure, bring on Horn. He just beat Manny Pacquiao, did 4 million viewers. I've done 6 million viewers. Let's do this.
I don't. 4 million viewers where?
On ESPN.
Wow. Oh, that's right. It wasn't a pay-per-view. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. Weren't you, like, off on vacation?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Never mind. I'll save my opinion.
Save your disdain for another time.
Yeah. I'll berate you when we stop recording.
For a half hour before and after every podcast, I just take, like, a verbal lashing.
Let's move on, because I think we know how this is going. This week, we have some fights.
Hold on. Just so everything is clear. I would fear for Horn's life.
Did you fear for Kell Brook's life?
No.
Who do you think wins, Kell Brook or Manny Pacquiao?
Against each other?
No, in a tag team match against Spence and Horn. Yes, against each other.
Damn, no, that tag team match sounds nice, though.
Can you imagine if you could do a tag team boxing match?
Oh my god. They would tag out between rounds.
No. You could tag out between rounds, and that would be part of the strategy, is blocking your opponent from reaching their corner.
Oh my god. This is amazing.
Like,
why
I think this could work.
Yes.
A tag team boxing match. And both guys, like, imagine your opponent, or no, your partner gets knocked out. So they just basically roll him out of the ring. And now you have two guys to beat, and it's still 12 rounds.
No, it's got to be 15.
15?
It's got to be 15 to 24, because in theory, each person is only going to fight 12 rounds.
Imagine the greatest comeback ever, where, like, you know, in the first round, let's say...
somebody's knocked out.
Yeah. So let's say, like, Horn gets knocked out, and now Spence has to come back for 12 rounds and fight a fresh Manny Pacquiao and Kell Brook.
That would be so amazing.
I think I'm going to call my people at PBC. I'm going to call them my people at Golden Boy. We're going to see if we can get this going.
Yeah, let's get the ball rolling. Tag team boxing.
Okay, how about in a tournament of guys that are basically on the cusp of retirement, we put them in the tag team tournament?
Ooh, that's brutal.
So, like, Rios and Alvarado versus... Herrera and Sona Cross.
In Matisse.
Provodnikov and Matisse. You can only be partners with somebody that you fought. That's, oh, this is brilliant. Oh, man. Guerrero and Kamigai?
Oh, no. Guerrero's Kamigai. Oh, man. No. And we got to get Ortiz in there. Who would Ortiz?
Berto.
And Berto, yes. Yes.
Okay, but seriously, Berto looked, or not Berto, Ortiz. That shot Ortiz landed on Sunday night to knock out Corral, that was sick.
It was a good punch. Yeah, I saw that. I watched the highlight of it.
Oh my god, because he was getting tagged, and I was like, Ortiz is now can't miss TV, because you know that any regular old punch is going to put him down. And if this is what boxing was like, where, like, everybody had, like, maybe
fatal,
like,
flaws,
2 pound gloves. and then it wasn't, like, filled with foam, like 2 pound gloves. Like, boxing would be so intense, because basically any one shot is the end of the fight.
And that's Ortiz's career right now.
That is it. And it's not like Khan, where you know Khan's getting up. It's like, if you know Ortiz gets hit, it's over.
Oh my god.
Anyway, tag team tournament. Let us know any other tag teams that you guys have in mind to join this tournament.
I think we lined up some sick tag teams right there.
Who would be Pacquiao's partner?
Oh,
Marquez?
Man. It would have to be, right? It would have to be.
I mean, we have to go with guys that are still semi-active, and Morales Marquez is closer to active than Morales. Yeah. Or maybe he's not. I don't know. Who knows? Eric Morales. I know Jose Luis Castillo is still fighting.
So let's be real, though. If you went onto Eric Morales' box rec and found out that he, like, fought 5 fights last year in Mexico, you wouldn't be surprised.
Not at all.
Exactly.
Nah, his last fight was against Danny Garcia.
Oh, okay.
Okay, good. That's good to know. But Jose Luis Castillo, I swear, is still fighting. Let me look this up just to be sure. I'm pretty sure he's got like 80 fights at this point. Oh, no, his last fight. His last fight, and naturally, of course, it was against Provodnikov in 2014.
Yeah. All right.
So in case Batiste has to bow out of the tournament due to an injury, Castillo could fill in.
Could fill in. Perfect.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. We get John Molina up in there. He can be a substitute.
Oh, man. They could...
John Molina and Mickey Bay.
You could form a stable out of Batiste's opponents.
Yeah.
You have Provodnikov, John Molina Jr.
And we should even do it. We should do one where it's like where it spans two weight classes. So you get one person from one weight class, then one person from a weight class above or below.
But some guys haven't done that. So, I mean, I just say like most of these guys wouldn't make weight anyway. A lot of them have been out of the ring for a while. So we just say the weight class is the ballpark 147 to 160.
Ballpark.
Anything's fine.
You can weigh in the day before or the day of, whichever.
No, weigh-in starts 7 days out, so whenever you're close to the weight, you're good.
As long as you can hit it within 7 days before the fight, you're good.
Oh, I put my money on Angulo and Kirkland to win it. I might have to cut this whole part out.
No, it was too amazing. It was too amazing.
Jesus.
Okay. All right, let's wrap this thing up, man.
Okay. Oh, we're talking about the fights next week. Clarissa Shields versus Nikki Adler. That's a title fight on Showbox. Mauricio Herrera fights Jesus Soto Cross that day.
This is a tune-up for his participation in the tournament.
On the undercard is Vyacheslav Shabransky versus Todd May, who is Shabransky's trying to earn his way to the competition. The next day, Top Rank, who will be in full representation, the headline is Vasily Lomachenko versus Miguel Mariaga. Anything right. You want to say about Mariaga fighting Lomachenko?
Tell me about something. Yeah, tell me about Mariaga.
Wait, what do you mean tell you about him? You don't know that he just lost to Oscar Valdez at 126?
Why is he fighting Lomachenko?
Are you setting me up or do you really not know?
No, I'm asking. Go ahead.
Jesus. I can't answer that question because he was the other guy that Top Rank has that is close to the weight class.
All right. I just don't get it, man. Like, I just don't get it. I really don't. Like, I say don't fight.
Lomachenko.
Like, don't even have the... Yeah, don't. Just say no. Just say no.
Well, like, one, Lomachenko wants to get paid. Two, here, I have a problem with this. And now, naturally, I don't have a problem. Like, let's say that this is Luke Campbell, okay? And Luke Campbell's fighting Mariaga. I'm okay with that fight. You know why? Because I don't think Campbell's that good.
Well, nobody's telling you Luke Campbell is number one pound for pound.
Now, that's the thing. That's the problem I have is that if Lomachenko's number one pound for pound, or even in the conversation, okay? Because number
even
one
in the
pound
conversation
for
top five.
I would say top 10. If you're in the conversation for top 10, there is no way you should be fighting a guy that just lost in a division below you.
In
you cannot
division
do
below
that.
To a rising prospect.
He didn't even lose to, like, the number one guy in the division. He lost to, like, the number five guy in the division.
So that's what I don't get. Like, so when I was trying to, like, lead you in, like, and I didn't do it well, but it's just, I just don't get it. Like, it is so difficult for me to get excited about these kind of fights. Yes, I like to watch Lomachenko fight. I'll tune in, without a doubt. But to have any... like thoughts about this fight or like real like interest or investment in it, I can't do it, man. It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. It makes no sense at all.
Because you want to know why? If you want to sit around and pretend that Lomachenko is, you know, top pound for pound, put his ass in there with somebody who's fought somebody and done something.
Well, what do you think about the conversation that there's really nobody else in the division for him to fight. That this is the
because
best
of promotional issues and everything like that. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, life happens. I get that. Doesn't mean I have to enjoy the fight.
I don't necessarily believe that, though. Because they were able to get PBC guys to fight Crawford.
Right.
They're able to get PBC guys to fight Golovkin. Like, these things can be worked out.
Yeah, they certainly can be. And it seems like Bob's just taking an easy path.
That's what I think it is that, you know, he's very new in the ESPN deal. And
right.
He wants to put on fights where he's in a, like, basically
it's
his guys.
It's a showcase fight. It's a showcase fight.
It's a showcase, and his guys are the ones who are bringing in the ratings.
Right, and proof that it's his guys bringing it.
Keeping all that money in-house, like, I think it's the right path. I mean, I don't agree with it. I don't like it, but I think
it's... No, you're right. From being new on the network, I honestly didn't even think about it from that perspective. But being new on the network, he needs to prove that his fighters could pull ratings. And that's exactly what it is.
And so, but, you know, that does not forgive the fact that he is pulling up a guy from a smaller weight class. That part is a little unacceptable. But, oh well.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
It's boxing.
Ray Beltran is on the undercard fighting Brian Vasquez, who has not really done anything of note at 135 since he fought, like, Jose Felix Jr. on the Pacquiao... what undercard was that? It was like Pacquiao Bradley 2?
Bradley 2, yeah.
It was one of the not so good undercards.
Beltran's been on a tear of late.
Oh yeah,
late career resurgence.
Yeah, I wonder what that's all about.
So often.
I got nothing to say about that, but
moving on.
So yeah, and then the undercard is filled with a lot of top ranks prospects, but they're all in showcase fights, and that's the fights this week. This podcast was a lot of fun to record. It will not be fun to edit because I think there's some things that we do need to take out.
What? No. Dude. If you edit me, I will be pissed. I'm serious.
Well, let's just hope that nobody really listens to the fight or not the fight, this podcast.
We'll find out.
And it's 100% possible. I mean, I don't get statistics for our listening. I have no clue how many people listen to our podcast.
He checks the bandwidth for the amount of downloads, and it just says zero. So,
no, actually, I haven't done that in a long time. I have not done that in a long time.
Yeah, because you could pull the bandwidth stats.
So if you know about this stuff, like, I never kind of set this up. It's kind of like I don't know how to set it up really. This is from someone who knows how to do lots of cool things with the computer. Don't know how to set that up. I never set it up anyway. So. I literally have no clue how many people listen to this.
I think that's always a problem with podcasts, though. Like, no podcasting, even the biggest ones, have a very hard time getting actual numbers because Apple doesn't release them, and you have to just kind of go by bandwidth.
Yeah, and, well, no, some people know how many listens they get, but
well,
I didn't set it up properly.
So. Not with any accuracy, I don't think. And just because you have a download doesn't mean you have a listen.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And I think actually I heard, this is like totally going off and stuff people don't want to talk about or don't want to hear about. Maybe they do. I don't know. But Apple is like retooling everything, and they are going to start to give out that kind of information of how, like, they're going to be able to track that in iTunes or podcast or whatever the hell the app is called.
Yeah. Apple doesn't release that kind of stuff right now.
Yeah. So it's kind of
tough. It'll be interesting.
I'm trying to look at the thing, but I don't really know. So...
check it out, guys. I got a new Twitter account. I don't really go, you know, do that like kind of stuff on Twitter very much, but you could check it out. You follow me, tweet me, let me know that you listen to the podcast. It's at SIXFOE. So hit me up, and I look forward to talking to you guys all on Twitter.
Wait, say that again. At
S as in Sam, I X. F as in Frank, O, E, 6FO.
6FOE?
Yep.
6FOE. Oh my God. You didn't set this up properly. I think I'm the only one that got this joke. So
That's all I needed.
Wow. If anybody's still listening at this point.
If you're still listening, throw that name into Google and you'll get it.
Oh God. This is maybe the worst joke on the podcast. Like you're basically making people have to do work.
But the payoff is so good.
Oh my God, I can't believe you've done this. Oh wow. All right, well,
cruising down the street in my 6-foot.
Oh, I didn't even put that together either. Jesus. This one has layers to it. All right, thank you for listening. If you like and enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review on iTunes.
Or just hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. And we will be back next week.